The end of an era. Britain's Queen Elizabeth II is laid to rest. How different will the reign of King Charles III be? And what role does the British monarchy play in a world where the Commonwealth's relevance is in doubt? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to Inside Story. I am Hashim Ahlbarra. The United Kingdom has said a final goodbye to its longest reigning monarch. Queen Elizabeth II was crowned in 1953, just a few years after World War II, when she had served in the military as a mechanic while her father helped rally Britain against the Germans. During her 70 years on the throne, she witnessed the fall of imperialism and the rise of democracies. Queen Elizabeth was not only the head of the royal family and the British head of state, she was the head of the Commonwealth, a group of 56 independent nations. Sarah Khairat looks back at her legacy.
A nation pauses. 2 minutes of silence. Observed not only across the United Kingdom, but in several other countries. A final goodbye to Queen Elizabeth II. Steeped in rich British and Christian tradition, her funeral was held in Westminster Abbey, the 800-year-old building where she married and later crowned. World leaders, heads of government, dignitaries and other royals were in attendance. On her casket, the imperial state crown and the sovereign's sceptre and orb, symbols of the power of the monarchy and controversially its colonialism, with recent calls by many in South Africa and India for the jewels to be returned. The Queen's funeral ushers in a new era. Her son Charles III is now king. He's also head of 56 Commonwealth countries, mostly former colonies, with a population of around 2.5 billion. For 14 of these countries, he is head of state. Supporters say they benefit from a membership that includes bilateral cooperation on international goals.
Durant son règne, marqué par...
During her reign, she was committed to her nation and friendships with others in the Commonwealth. She earned our respect and admiration by winning the hearts of millions of people in the UK and the world.
I think that all Canadians will reflect appropriately on the Queen. The different governments have made their own decision to mark the occasion, but for me, I recognise that for 70 years, there's been a queen who was profoundly interested in Canada.
But detractors say the Commonwealth is a post-colonial club with little relevance in the modern world, and the cessation of King Charles has led to renewed calls to remove the British monarch as head of state for some nations.
Let's look at who we are as a people, who we are as a nation, and really look at moving forward. Let's look at decolonising from Britain. The United Nations have told us, you need to decolonise Australia. You need to cut off the colonial shackles. This will be the time to do it.
With a rise in nationalist and anti-colonial sentiment, the future of the British monarchy is uncertain. Charles says he's ready to embrace change, but it's unclear to what extent that change will affect Britain's legacy. Sarah Khairat, Inside Story.
Let's bring in our guests from London. Zaid Belbaji, managing partner of Hardcastle Advisory, a political consultancy. From New Delhi, Mridula Mukherjee, a professor of history at Jawaharlal Nehru University. And from Sydney, we're joined by Cindy McCreary, head of the Modern Monarchy in Global Perspectives Research Hub at Sydney University. Welcome to the programme. Zaid, is defining what it means to be a monarch in modern times, particularly amid this ever-changing political landscape in the UK, is it going to be the biggest challenge facing King Charles III?
I think it will be, and you're quite right to point that out, Hashim. However, it is something that the monarchy has looked at for several decades now. We've seen a monarchy that's grown very much more attuned to young people's issues, the use of social media, trending issues such as climate change. And I think King Charles, while he's been taking on some of the roles of Her Late Majesty, has been very keen to embrace those issues to keep the monarchy up to date and relevant.
Mridula, King Charles III is definitely going to start building bridges with the different parts of the world, and particularly with the Commonwealth. India is part of the Commonwealth. King, when he was prince, Charles made many visits to India. He said he was impressed with the diversity of the country. But you get a sense that there is a complex relationship there, particularly this sentiment among the Indians that that Britain needs to apologise for the atrocities that were committed during the British colonial rule.
For the first part of your question, yes, I think the fact that King Charles, when he was Prince Charles, made more than 10 visits to India, which is quite unusual, obviously shows that he had some strong interest in many aspects of the country. It is known that, for example, he was very interested in Ayurveda, the traditional system of medicine. Of course, he also showed a lot of interest in some very interesting aspects, you know, for example, the Dabbawalas of Bombay, who deliver tiffins to lakhs of people through bicycle and train and whatnot. So he's been interested in many things, including he visited Mother Teresa in Kolkata, and there are very interesting stories of his visit over there. So obviously, I think he has already a familiarity with the country, which would be much more than many others in the royal family. And I also understand that one of our very famous holistic physicians has been his personal physician for the last more than a decade, of him and his wife. So I think there are aspects of Indian life which have obviously interested him, fascinated him. He's also taken a lot of interest, as you know, in the issue of climate change. He's supported various charities that have worked in India. So on the whole, I don't think India is going to be like an unfamiliar territory for him, and I don't think he should find it difficult to deal with India. The second part of your question about, you know, the feeling or sometimes the demand that comes for apology for the atrocities, etc. I think the demands have come for more specific things, like when the Queen made her last visit, there was a public kind of feeling that when she visited Jallianwala Bagh, which was the site of one of the atrocities where hundreds of people were killed in cold blood, that she should apologize. Well, she didn't actually apologize in so many words, but expressed a regret. And so there was also a sense of regret in India that she did not come across as full apology. But I do wish to point out one thing to you.
Cindy, if you don't mind, I'll get back to you to talk more in detail about those issues. But let me go next to Cindy. Cindy, I would like to ask you this question. Is there any urgent need for King Charles III to reinvent, rebrand, reform the monarchy for the monarchy itself to continue to appeal to its own people?
Thank you, Hashim. That's a really complex question because on the one hand, I do think, as an earlier speaker said, that there are many issues that Charles is very committed to, such as climate change, youth issues, which appeal very much to young people in my country, Australia, but also countries in the United Kingdom and around the world. And I think that would give Charles more popularity with that demographic. And we know, for example, that many young people don't actually connect very well with Charles at the moment. And they have more sympathy and interest in younger members of the royal family, not only the new Prince and Princess of Wales, but also, controversially, Harry and Meghan. So that's a challenge for Charles if he wants to retain and encourage youth interest in him as a monarch. On the other hand, of course, as he said in his first speech following the Queen's death, he very much wants to follow in her footsteps, and he's trying to demonstrate a sense of stability and continuity with the very successful reign of his mother. But to modernise too quickly or too far to appeal to young people risks, of course, losing support among older generations who typically tend to be more in favour of the monarchy in many countries. So I think it's a very great challenge for Charles. I'd also add that I think a number of the areas where Charles can perhaps make the greatest contribution is not in his role as sovereign, but as head of the Commonwealth. Climate change, youth issues are areas where not only are many people interested around the Commonwealth, but it's also an area where he may be able to speak more freely than, of course, he can as a sovereign, where, of course, he needs to be very quiet and not to be seen to be meddling in the politics of Britain or indeed any other country.
Zaid, King Charles III is king of the UK. Four deeply divided nations that form the United Kingdom, divided by class, generation, geography, politics, economy. Isn't this an extremely extraordinary task that the monarchy itself will have to assume in the near future to be able to bring together this gathering of four nations?
You're quite right, Hashim. And again, like we've discussed earlier in this debate, it's one about relevance. You will have noted that the monarchy has been very keen to hug the devolved nations of Scotland, Northern Ireland and Wales during this 10 days of national mourning. It is no mistake or accident that the Queen began, her coffin began in Edinburgh. There were bagpipes at her funeral. King Charles was keen to address the Welsh Parliament in Welsh. And there was that very emotive visit to Belfast. There's no mistake that the monarchy has done this on purpose. And even going further afield, there will be an issue, of course, with the home nations. But even farther afield with Canada, Australia, New Zealand, we can expect King Charles to be on the plane. I think the Queen visited Canada over 20 times. Again, she was, I'm sure, a great author of her own funeral today, and it was no mistake and no accident that Canadian Mounties led the funeral procession, again, a nod to a larger, more political issue that may or may not rear its head in the future. In terms of the most pressing one for King Charles, it would be Scotland, because there are parts of Scotland that, you know, are slightly restive with regards to their part of the union. Mm. However, what he has on his side is his grandmother, the Queen Mother, Queen Elizabeth. She was Scottish. The family does have deep Scottish roots, and it will not be lost upon many that King James I came to inherit the throne from Elizabeth I, and he was King of Scots. And the two kingdoms are very much united in terms of blood and history.
Mridula, quite interesting. Right after the death of Queen Elizabeth II in India, particularly on social media, there was this demand for the return of the famous Kohinoor diamond that was discovered in India and which formed the main jewel on the main part of the crown jewel. Now, apart from this, let's set this aside. But in India, when you have part of the Commonwealth, you have the Queen now, the King as the head of the state, although a symbolic role, doesn't this going to look one day a very anachronistic idea that needs to go away with history?
You know, I think it's necessary to understand that when India joined the Commonwealth, this issue was very much there then. How would India join the Commonwealth? Because India was becoming a republic. So this was sorted out then, that India does not recognize the King or the Queen of England as their monarch. It's not the same relationship as Canada has or Australia has in the Commonwealth. The King was then recognized as the symbol of the unity of the Commonwealth, but not as a monarch or as somebody who was recognized as the head in any way occupying any position within India. So this was already an adjustment that was made to accommodate India right at that time, immediately after independence. So therefore, the monarchy in India and the Commonwealth is not seen in the same way as it is seen from Australia or Canada, which are different, you know, which were colonies where British people went and settled, you know. So there is, I don't think there's any issue over there. That issue was settled long ago. Nobody in India thought of Queen Elizabeth as their queen, no? So she's the Queen of England. So it's a very different issue. These issues have been sorted out. About the Kohinoor, well, you know, this demand keeps coming up from time to time. And of course, it will come up now. It has come up already now that this is a time to wait. The thing is that, frankly, I don't think that it's going to happen. Of course, we would be very happy to get the Kohinoor. But I think politically, one must recognize there are four countries that have laid claim to it: Afghanistan, Pakistan, India. And, you know, the thing is that if the British start returning all that they've taken from the rest of the world, the British Museum will be empty very soon. And I don't think that's on the agenda. So practically speaking, I don't think it's happening.
Cindy, the Bahamas Prime Minister, Philip Davis, intends to hold a referendum to remove King Charles III as official head of state of the Bahamas. This comes against the backdrop of a decision made in 2021 by Barbados, which removed Queen Elizabeth II as head of the state. The Australians are looking forward to do the same thing. Are we talking about an organisation, the Commonwealth, that becomes more and more irrelevant in the eyes of many people?
Well, I think we need to distinguish, Hashem, between the Commonwealth and Commonwealth realms. There are 56 nation members of the Commonwealth, but of those 56, 36 are republics, like India, and only 14, well, 15 including the United Kingdom, are Commonwealth realms, and then there are five other monarchies. So I don't think it's a question that the Commonwealth itself will become irrelevant, but I do think we will see, as you've just suggested, more Commonwealth realms becoming republics. But what we know, and India really was the test case for this, that it is possible for a country to become a republic but remain within the Commonwealth. So I do think that will happen. I don't think all Commonwealth realms will change. I don't think Canada will. And I think we know in Australia that our Prime Minister has confirmed that his priority in his first term of office is to enshrine an Indigenous voice in Parliament, and that a referendum on the republic would wait till a second term of his government, which in Australia would not start till 2025. So I think we've got a while to wait with Australia, New Zealand and other Commonwealth realms. But the Commonwealth itself, I think, has potential now with Charles as its head, because, as I've said, he is so interested in many issues which are relevant. The Commonwealth has some of the youngest, it's got the very youthful population, it's got some of the poorest nations in the world, it's got nations which are so vulnerable to climate change. And these are issues which Charles has a solid track record of advocating for. So I think the Commonwealth might actually become more relevant under Charles's leadership, even if the number of Commonwealth realms drops.
Mm-hmm. Zaid, you were talking early about Scotland. But as you know, there's this pro-independence sentiment which is gaining momentum in different parts of the world. In Scotland was one of those places. In Northern Ireland, the Sinn Féin became after this year's elections, the largest political party in Northern Ireland's assembly. Couldn't this be an indication that the monarchy will really have to tackle some of the most delicate issues they has just been delaying for quite some time, which is basically many people saying that it's about time for us to chart our own political course, our own destiny?
Definitely. And I think Scotland is an important case. As you know, there was a referendum in 2014. Around 55%, a decisive 55%, wanted to stay part of the United Kingdom. The same in Canada. Surveys show, you know, about 55% in Australia and elsewhere. But the home nations, I think, will be the most pressing issue and a real challenge that I think the new king would like to confront head on. The wealth and the power of this country is because of this very union, and I think it's almost sacred. So the monarchy will be at the forefront of efforts to try and keep these countries tied together. But there are strong ties, and I think it's almost a wake-up call. It's not so much an invitation for them to leave. They have devolved parliaments, devolved senates. They have first ministers. They have a lot of sign off on their own internal policies, for example, in Scotland. However, the monarchy will need to look at this quite closely. And you're right to raise that, Hashim, definitely.
Mridula, we've spoken about the challenges. On the other hand, when you look at King Charles III, as Crown Prince, he was known for his outspoken stances when it comes to the climate change, religious tolerance, diversity and so on and so forth. Do you think that these issues could help him build bridges with different parts of the world, the Commonwealth and India in particular? Because they resonate among many, many people all over the world.
Certainly, certainly. I think these are precisely the kind of, within quotes, non-political issues where he can play an important role. And I think that's one reason India stayed on in the Commonwealth, because it felt that any avenues where countries could work together in areas other than just straight geopolitics were important. So the Commonwealth can be a very important forum, a progressive forum for working on issues on which you actually need international cooperation. Everybody knows that climate change issue, which is one of the biggest issues before us today. Just see what's happened in Pakistan. I mean, the floods, one third of the country is under flood. You know, South Asia is actually reeling under the impact of climate change in an unbelievable kind of way. I think we would be more than happy in this part of the world for any initiatives and leadership which makes people come together and have strategies which actually work and get implemented. Mm-hmm. With goodwill from all sides. We could do with that.
Cindy, the King Charles III, his mother was coronated during the decline of the British Empire. She passed away amid this uncertainty about the future of the UK following Brexit. Do you think that in a way or another, the future of the monarchy itself in the UK is going to be purely shaped by political and economic issues in the UK itself in the long run?
Hashim, this is a very difficult question to answer, but I don't think it's just going to be simply political and economic issues which will determine the future of the monarchy in the UK. I think that, as other speakers have said, there are strong ties of history with the four home nations, but also with the Commonwealth. I think in a sense as well, a monarchy that can modernize and can gain the goodwill and the support of young people in particular and younger generations by showing, as we saw with the funeral procession, the promise of the future, not just the current monarch, but the future, the heir to the throne, and indeed the next heir to the throne with William and George. And I think also a monarchy that, you know, in the words of William Bagehot, that 19th century political theorist who wrote the English Constitution, who talked about the magic that the dignified part of the Constitution, namely the monarchy, can give. This is where that sort of magic could keep the monarchy going, albeit in a ceremonial way. I think that celebrity now is sort of entwined into monarchy. We see that the way that I think many people understood the reign of Elizabeth II, not through history, but through fictional programs like The Crown on television. This, in a sense, weirdly, I think, may offer hope for Charles mm-hmm. and the monarchy if people can continue to believe in the magic.
Okay. Zaid, when you succeed someone who has been there for 70 years, who's been larger than life, could King Charles III's legacy be just trying to maintain the same appeal the monarchy has had during Queen Elizabeth II, and that on its own was going to be widely seen as his biggest contribution?
I mean, the reality of this conversation, Hashim, is longevity, as in the monarchy has been in times like this before. King George III, Queen Victoria had very long reigns, and those that reigned after them reigned for particularly short periods. It's just the reality of life. I think, though, the king has some very specific views, which he will make known, for example, on the size of the family. The reality is this will be a almost caretaker reign and a filler between two other reigns. That's simply the way that succession works. However, what I would add is that monarchy always has detractors, but the real interest and the magic that was last mentioned is that you're in Doha, I'm in London, our guests are in Australia and in India, and we're discussing a family in central London. This, to me, and the outpouring of, condolences, etc., over the last few weeks, shows the enduring quality of this family, whether it's through its celebrity, mm-hmm. whether it's through its political influence, whether it's through colonial legacy, has a huge footprint on the world. And I think we've seen that, just with the Commonwealth, on how Togo and Gabon have joined. These are French colonies that have joined the Commonwealth, which I think is going to be a sign of the way forward.
Gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, I'm really running out of time. I wish we had more time to continue our conversation about this interesting topic. Zeyd Belbaji, Ridula Mukherjee, Cindy McCreary, I really appreciate your insight. Thank you. And thank you too for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com, for further discussion. Go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Hashim Ahbara, and the entire team here in Doha. Bye for now.